Ken Robertson welcoming you back to TV Confidential Radio Talk Show about television that will spend this segment remembering the life and legacy of Theodore Bacall. Theodore Bacall, the Emmy Award winning and Tony Award nominated, Grammy Award nominated, and Academy Award nominated actor who not only played Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof more than any actor, but was the first actor to play Captain Von Trapp in the original Broadway production of Sound of Music. Most of you listening, however, probably know Theodore Bacall best for his many, many, many guest appearances on television, including such classic shows as Gunsmoke, Naked City, Mission Impossible, Route 66, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Columbo, and Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, as well as such classic films as The African Queen and The Defiant Ones. Theodore Bacall passed away in July 2015 at age 91, which means the calendar year 2024 marks the centennial year of Theodore Bacall's birth. To mark the occasion, both Actors Equity and the City of Los Angeles have events that will celebrate Theo's centennial. Joining us now to tell us more about it is Amy Ginsberg Bacall, Theodore Bacall's widow and an accomplished journalist, foreign correspondent, and radio broadcaster in her own right. Amy Ginsberg Bacall, welcome to TV Confidential.
Hi. Hi. What a beautiful introduction. It's well done.
Thank you. Tell us how you first met Theo.
Oh, we're going right for the story that everybody, I always make everybody wait for that story, but for you, I'll make an exception. India. I've lived there for 17 years as a foreign correspondent for a major international newspapers, but I would visit Los Angeles about once a year because my family lived here. And on one of such visits, at a Sabbath evening meal at a mutual friend of ours, a screenwriter, we met and we were seated opposite each other in the table. And in retrospect, it was definitely love at first sight, but he was 38 years my senior, and so one doesn't think of it as romantic love when there's such an age difference. One thinks, oh, you know, we're simpatico, you know, here's some soul connection, some connection. But so we really started a jump start of fast and fun, a friendship that got serious very fast. I was already back in India, and he was Skyping me to India every day. And within 3 months of meeting, we decided that we need to be together. And I thought he was already 87 years old. I thought at that age, you don't want to wait too long.
Mm-hmm.
So I packed up my things, packed up my children, gave away my cat, sold my brand new air conditioner that I had been waiting 17 years to finally own, and resold it, and got on a plane and came to Los Angeles, and we married very shortly after. How is that for a Cinderella story?
Well, it touches on another thing I want to ask. It's hard to pinpoint what it is that attracts two people to each other. A lot of it's kismet, a lot of it's time and place, a lot of it is where you both are as individuals, and whatever triggers the desire or in both of you to come together. I mean, I just knowing a little bit about you, Amy, one thing that you and Theo had in common were your activism and your interest in social issues. But when you decide to uproot yourself, as you did, there's got to be other things like that. I mean, like things about Theo as a person and things that attracted you and things that about you as a person that attracted Theo to you.
Well, yes, of course. there was many cultural themes. So we both come from a similar Jewish background, a Jewish background that was less on the religious side and more as a cultural tribal belonging, you know, with a deep sense of belonging to a certain tribe. And at the same time, for both of us, our Judaism means a commitment to making this world a better place. You know, there's a whole stream of Judaism that says really all the rest of it it's important, but it goes around the main kernel of our religion and of our people, and that is that we're born to make the world better. So Theo and I both came kind of from that background. We knew the similar songs, similar socialist Jewish songs from our childhood. But besides that, Theo was like a ray of sunshine. And it was a time in my life where, you know, I needed a ray of sunshine. I mean, I know that he felt the same about me, but really for me, that he was just this ray of sunshine, this beautiful, huge tree with large branches that made a shadow that I could come into. I'd been a single mom for many years. My career was demanding, large, amazing, but I was living kind of a rough life over in India in the jungles and living among yogis and traveling to villages and getting my stories with my two children. And suddenly he was he offered this kind of a stability and someone to lean on. And that was, of course, fantastic. He was joyful and full of laughter. I believed in everything that he stood for. And also he represented kind of a past that I had always been fascinated with and didn't have the chance to come up so close to. So I don't want to say about my husband that he was just living history that was fascinating, but he was. And
yeah.
That wasn't the main reason. That wasn't my main attraction, but that was an attraction. I'm a writer. I'm a storyteller. And he represented an entire part of our history. He touched so many different historical moments, and he touched them deeply. And to come up close to that was fulfilling. So, and he was a great guy. He was a gentleman. He, you know, at least in the first part of our relationship, plied me with gifts and with pampering and with. So from every direction, it was like a fairy tale. I was living with my kids in the jungle in India with monkeys jumping on our roof in the monsoon. And if they break a tile, then the rain would come in all night and I'd just have to put down buckets. You know, I was living a very local, you know, third world lifestyle. And he brought me into this, you know, glamorous world of Westwood and the Hollywood. And the whole thing was like also like a fairy tale. So there's lots of elements that went into it. But I don't want to sound frivolous. Our love story was very deep. We very much felt like soulmates, and our values were one and the same in really every way. And after he left, I was left with this realization that in a way we were like two racers in a relay race that just met for that brief moment in time, long enough for him to pass a baton to me. That baton was full of knowledge and values and stories that he wanted to keep going, and that someone had relayed to him before that, and he gave it into my hands. And now I feel I can't lay that baton down. Sometimes people say to me, he's been gone for 9 years, you were only married for 3 or 4, you're a young woman, you know, I myself have my own creative endeavors. What are you doing? Like, why are you still continuing with the Theodore Mikhail Legacy Project? Why are you devoting so much of your life to keeping his legacy alive? And I feel like I have no choice in the matter almost. He gave me this baton. It's mine to carry forward. And that's what I'm doing.
On the line with us is Amy Ginsberg Bikel. Amy is the widow of Theodore Bikel, the legendary stage, screen, and television actor who passed away in July 2015, but who remains beloved by countless fans around the world, not only for his performing career, but also his tireless efforts on behalf of social justice and workers' rights. Theodore Bikel would have turned 100 in calendar year 2024 this year. To mark the occasion, Amy will be touring the country with a special Theodore Bikel Centennial program that will showcase the arc of Theo's career and legacy. We'll ask Amy more about that in just a second, but in the meantime, you can learn more about the Theodore Bikel Legacy Project by going to either theodorebikel.net or amyginsbergbikel.com. Before we get caught up in other things, there are two things I want to dovetail on what you just said. A, I don't know what I love more, the image that Theo was a ray of sunshine, or that he was this joyful tree. I think I like the image of joyful tree better, because that is, I mean, it's very visual, and yet it speaks to, it not only speaks to the person you got to know, but you know, for all of us who are lucky to find that one person at a particular point in our life, how that, you know, how having that that kind of life partner can be.
I feel very blessed and very lucky, way beyond that I understand, you know, how I came to deserve it. You know, imagine, you know, living your life. Okay, I had a large career, but it wasn't as large as all that. You know, let's be honest. It was large. I was well-known in certain circles. I was a successful journalist, but it was what it was. And like I said, I was a single mom in India. It's, you know, and then to be plucked out of that by this legend, by this living legend, by this hero, by this someone who was beloved by all and had a lesson and a teaching that he continued to teach, you know, until the day he died. And to have the honor of coming close to being chosen, not only by Theo, but often I felt by God, you know, by chosen somehow. How did he find me? I'm all the way in India, you know. Mm-hmm. And for years, my relatives, my friends tried to bring me back to this country. And I didn't want to hear of it. I loved my life in India. I adored it. I was, you know, it suited me very well. And suddenly there he was, and he just, almost you can say, you know, did that come here with his finger kind of thing, you know. And within 3 months, that was it. I said goodbye to a life of 17 years. And the honor of it, it continues to move me. Like, how did I get so lucky to come up so close to this incredible legacy? After Theo passed away, one of the first things I did in my deep, deep grieving, which really lasted for at least 5 years after he passed away, really for longer than we were married,
yeah.
My deep continued. But one of the first things I did within that first year was travel to certain cities around the country where Theo had his papers stored in storage rooms, you know, those, you know, storage rooms that you pay for a room and you mm-hmm. have your things there. His family had never wanted it in the house because Theo saved everything. And they all kind of made fun of him about it. So when he told me that those things were there, I thought that was just incredible. I wanted to get the stuff while he was still alive. But in his great wisdom, I think he knew that there were other things that were more important and that I would do it after he passed.
Yeah.
And indeed, I traveled around to these different storerooms, and I got shipping companies or whatever you need to do to get it all to Los Angeles. And I got an extra huge room in Los Angeles with these, you know, 70 years of papers or 60 years of papers, all filed very nicely in big cardboard file boxes, and spent the entire next year, so from the summer of, or from the fall of 2015 until the fall of 2016, going through the papers. I'd bring a few boxes slowly to my house and then back to the storeroom. And in the evening when the kids were sleeping and I was done with work, I, you know, either pour myself a vodka or make myself a cup of tea and sit in our living room with the lights kind of dimmed and go through these papers. And it was almost like a holographic display opened up in front of me because I could see in my imagination what I was reading. And the papers were incredible. And also Theo kept a carbon copy of every letter, you know, everything that he wrote. And so I had the correspondences and his paperwork from the early 50s all the way through when internet kind of took over the paper writing.
Yeah.
And it was political papers. It was all of his work for the union and for civil rights. It was all of his work for campaigning, for JFK, letters from Eleanor Roosevelt, Eleanor's letters from Jackie Kennedy. It was all the folk music years, correspondences with Pete Seeger, the founding of the Newport Folk Festival, the minutes from the meetings of the founding of the Newport Folk Festival in his apartment in Greenwich Village, notes from directors and, you know, notes from Rodgers and Hammerstein berating him for having gained, you know, "Dear Theo, we were at the show last night. You're popping your buttons." "Dear Theo, you know, we've already told you twice not to put that extra laugh at the top of the second act. You know, we know you get a good laugh, but we don't want that line." You know, letters right there, letters handwritten or typed letters from them. Letters to fans, beautiful, incredible letters to fans that had his soul in them. A lot of correspondences with lovers over the years, you know, with women that he had deep relationships with, that, you know, I got to know him through those. And And as that year went by, I felt like I was falling more and more in love with my husband, who was now gone. It was the most peculiar experience. He's gone, and I'm just falling more and more in love with him, getting to know him more, seeing that his anecdotes, not only that his anecdotes had sounded almost preposterous and impossible, not only am I seeing the papers to see that they're true, but I'm seeing that he was modest. He did not seem like a modest man. He certainly knew his own value. But when I'm reading the papers, I'm seeing that he didn't even represent the whole extent of it, that he was even more than he ever let on. And then now UCLA has those papers. They acquired the collection, and they're at the special collections at UCLA. And they're just incredible, these papers. You know, enough for Buch, you know, for Broadway musicals, if anyone's listening, for books, for movies, for miniseries, and more. You know, amazing, what I came to find out about him.
Well, one of the things that Amy is doing to not only to manifest her love, her deep love, and all of the wonderful things she's learned about Theo Bacall since his passing, but also to extend his legacy, she founded the Theodore Bacall Legacy Project, which perpetuates the ideals and passions that were the wellspring of Theo Bacall's life and work. You can learn more about the Theo Bacall Legacy Project at theodorebacall.net. In recognition of Theodore Bacall's enduring cultural legacy and the many years in which he led the Actors Union, the Los Angeles City Council recently unanimously voted to name the square in front of the SAG-AFTRA building after Theodore Bacall, while Actors Equity, the union of all stage actors in the country, will host a celebration of Theodore Bacall's life in Los Angeles on Monday, September 23rd. What can you tell us about the Monday, September 23rd event, Amy? And what can you tell us about some of the other events you have on tap to celebrate Theo's centennial?
October 6th, right. So first of all, Theo was not only an enormous civil rights activist. He marched in the South. He was arrested for justice. He was an anti-apartheid activist. He was one of the forces in the free Soviet jury movement. Endless. What he did was endless. He used every stage that he had to talk about his ideals. He would say, "We know what happens when good people remain silent in the face of injustice." We need to mention that Theo himself, as a child, had to escape the Nazis. Soon after his bar mitzvah was the Anschluss, which is when the Germans marched into Austria unopposed and annexed Austria. Theo was a child. He was 13. He had to escape. And he always said that in one way or another, he remained a refugee for the rest of his life, that even when you become a superstar, the feeling of having been chased away for fear of your life, leaving behind family, your grandmother, you know, leaving behind everybody, is not a feeling that ever goes away. And that informed very much his sense of social justice. So when he was a young man...
To learn more about the Theodore Bacall Legacy Project, go to amyginsbergbacall.com. Amy is A-I-M-E-E, ginsbergbacall.com, or theodorebacall.net, theodorebacall.net. Quick program notes. Since we recorded this conversation with Amy, the date of the naming ceremony for the Theodore Bacall Square on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles has been changed. The date of that ceremony is now Monday, October 13th. For more information, theodorebacall.net or amyginsbergbacall.com/legacy-project. We'll continue our conversation with Amy Ginsberg Bacall. We come back here on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, brand assets, copyright rights, publicity rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com, tectoniclaw.com, to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com. Rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. If you're a fan of Mike Connors, if you're a fan of Mannix, be sure to check out Mike Connors, A Life of Integrity in Film and Television by Bill Taylor, an excellent new book that not only tells you everything you want to know about the life and career of Mike Connors, but captures the utter decency of Mike Connors, the person. Mike Connors, A Life of Integrity in Film and Television, available now wherever books are sold through our friends at Bear Manor Media. You can also find it Amazon.com, BarnesNoble.com, wherever books are sold online.
We were in Boston, and we had already been out for at least 10 weeks, if not more. And, you know, we were still futzing around with bits and pieces in the show. Rodgers and Hammerstein decided that there was something lacking in the score, and had to do with the fact that I was in the cast.
And could play the guitar.
And could play the guitar.
Ed Roberts and Laura guest Amy Ginsberg Bickell. Amy is the widow of Theodore Bickell. Theodore Bickell, legendary stage, screen, and television actor who passed away in July 2015, but who remains beloved by countless fans and countless actors around the world, not only for his vast performing career, but also his tireless efforts on behalf of social justice, workers' rights, and the rights of working actors. Theodore Bickell would have turned 100 in 2024. Amy Ginsberg Bickell is also the founder of the Theodore Bickell Legacy Project, which perpetuates the ideals and passions that were the wellspring of Theo Bickell's life and work. You can learn more about the Theo Bickell Legacy Project at theodorebickell.net. In recognition of Theodore Bickell's enduring cultural legacy and the many years in which he led the Actors Union, the Los Angeles City Council recently unanimously voted to name the square in front of the SAG-AFTRA building after Theodore Bickell, while Actors Equity, the union of all stage actors in the country, will host a celebration of Theodore Bickell's life in New York on Monday, September 23rd. While the public dedication and naming ceremony of the Theodore Bickell Square outside the SAG-AFTRA building on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles will take place Monday, October 13th. For more information on both the events, TheodoreBickell.net or AmyGinsbergBickell.com/legacy-project. I need to ask you, because you mentioned that in the course of the past few years, you've taken a truly deep dive into his papers and gotten to know, not only fall in love with him more even after he passed, but got to know him more after he passed. At various points in his career, he worked with Stanley Kramer in The Defiant Ones. He performed the words of Norman Lear in All in the Family, and he performed the words of Rod Serling in the famous episode of The Twilight Zone. Both of Kramer, Lear, and Serling, one of the things they have in common is that they use television as a platform to discuss and bring to light social issues. I'm curious. I would hope that the opportunity to work with people like those resonated with him, given his interest and desire for social justice and rights for actors.
Yes, absolutely. And not only that, but then he would always use those relationships retroactively, or, you know, looking, you know, he would use those relationships to form alliances in all of the causes that he was busy with, and vice versa. You know, so when he would give big concerts or programs, or, you know, do fundraisers or any of the things that he would be involved in the beginning as an organizer, but as his career took off more and more, he didn't have as much time to really organize events, but he would always participate in them gladly, and then he would reach out to these directors and others, and, you know, Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks, and, you know, there was a bunch of them that this social justice was very important to them, and they would reach out to each other to give support on events that they were doing, or letters to the editor. You know, sometimes there'll be a big signed letter, you know, that'll go out with a lot of people signed on it, and so they would definitely stay in contact about this kind of action.
Tell us a little bit about, you mentioned you do a 90-minute program that gives audiences, that captures as much of the depth and breadth of Theo, of Theo's career and Theo the person as you can capture in 90 minutes. Can you give our listeners an idea of what a typical program's like?
Yes, I'm going to, and I'm going to say before I even talk, and also when I'm finished, that if any of you want me to come to your city, to your church, to your synagogue, to your library, to your theater, anywhere at all, just get in touch with me on my website that we'll name again later, and I'll, you know, I'll take up any lead or any tip. I do have this fantasy in my mind that I'll get to every, you know, every city in this country by the time I'm done, and bring the word of Theo so that people can celebrate him, celebrate his 100th birthday, and know that such a man lived among us.
Quick program note for a current list of cities and venues that Amy will be coming to for the rest of September, October, November, December, and into early 2025, amyginsbergbakel.com/legacy-project.
So, yes, my show is, I usually go to universities, museums, sometimes Holocaust museums, sometimes cultural museums, sometimes bureaus of education, and many times to synagogues, because naturally the Jewish world has an even more exciting interest in him, although not only. And I have some video material that I bring, montages of his performances, My Fair Lady and All the Family, as you mentioned, and Columbo and Little House on the Prairie, and he was in everything, right? He was in The Paper Chase and Murder, She Wrote, mm-hmm. and Twilight Zone and Star Trek and Babylon 5, and every show there was, you know, name it, he's on it. So I have good montages of that and parts from his film, but mostly what I do is I tell the story of the life using also our book that we wrote together called Theodore Bikel's The City of Light. We wrote it together, even though the book came out after he died. Mm-hmm. He wrote some of it before he died, and then I finished it. And that's about his childhood in Vienna. So the program always starts in his childhood in Vienna and then goes through this really incredible story that you think Woody Allen could not have made this up. and a kibbutz, and then getting bitten by the acting bug, and off to London to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, and big success on the West End very quickly, and Streetcar Named Desire for Sir Laurence Olivier, and The Love of Four Colonels for Peter Ustinov, and becoming friends with Princess Margaret, who brought him back to Buckingham Palace to give a private concert for the Queen of England when they were both 26 years old, and, you know, then getting tasked at the African Queen and coming to America and becoming a New Yorker and loving it, and the whole story of his life, which is really marvelous and unbelievable, and his recording career and all of that, and I show these clips, and then when the show is over, I always end with a story, which I'll tell you now as well, because I feel a spiritual mission to tell this story anytime I talk about Theo,
mm-hmm.
and that is, you know, so we started with him as a child, being chased away from Vienna, the city of his childhood, which he loved with all of his heart, and when he was 88 years old, it was the 75-year anniversary of Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht was that horrible day and night when all law, you know, law and order when it came to Jews was finished under the Nazi regime, and synagogues and homes and shops and all were broken and destroyed, and the glass was broken, and the beginning of the end, you know, that Kristallnacht. So when he was 88 years old, it was the 75-year anniversary of Kristallnacht, and the Austrian government invited Theo back to Vienna, to the city of light of his childhood, to give a concert in the Austrian parliament. And there, in front of the entire parliament and the prime minister and the vice chancellor and the secretary of defense and the chief of staff of the army and ambassadors and the chief rabbi of Austria and many dignitaries in the hall, he stood before them and he said, I thank you for inviting me here on this momentous occasion. The significance of this is not lost on me, that the mass murderers are gone, and I'm the one here singing my people's songs of peace and freedom. And we gave them a beautiful, delightful concert on this occasion of the 75-year anniversary of Kristallnacht. Theo used to sing in 21 languages. This concert, I believe, had 5 languages. When he was all finished, he said, now this last song is only sung standing and only listened to standing, so everybody please rise. And he had everyone in the parliament room stand up at attention, and then he sang to them in Yiddish the song of the partisans, of the Jews who had escaped into the forest and tried to survive, of who very few did survive, but the partisans who tried to fight back. And there's a Yiddish song called Zognit Kainmol, and that is the song of the partisans. And he sang the song of the partisans to this whole Austrian parliament that was standing at attention to receive this song. And he told them their voices were silenced, but I'm here today to 75 years. You know, it could have been a different ending, but it wasn't. You know, I'm here singing you their song. And it was an incredible occasion. And when we were at the hotel at night and he was, you know, trying to fall asleep. There's so much adrenaline after an event like that. It's a little hard to sleep, but he's trying to fall asleep. And he said, I think today, tonight, I've understood for what God created me. It was for this occasion. And when I heard that, immediately a vow arose in my heart that I would tell this story, you know, for as long as I could, to as many people as I could, as many corners of the earth as I could, so that we would know that stories continue and nothing is over. Stories continue and history continues, and history is made up of moments like this, you know, when people are able to go back and have a moment of this, of dignity and respect. And so, yeah, so my program ends with that, and then we always end with a beautiful Q&A. And the Q&As are so fun because everywhere I go, there are always people in the audience that have their very own Theodore Bikel stories, always. In my last program, I had someone stand up and say, when my mother was mad at my father, she always said, I'm leaving you. I'm going to Theodore Bikel. I'm going to Theodore Bikel. Other people say, you know, I was 18 years old, or 19 years old. I went to a concert of his in my town, and I went up backstage later, and I said, Mr. Bikel, I know this is preposterous, but by any chance, would you come back to my dorm? All my roommates were all big folkies, and we're all, you know, trying our hand at folk music. Would you come and play with us? We'll get you a, you know, 6-pack of beer or whatever. And he did, you know, someone in my audience would say, and he did, and he came back to our college dorm, and we played together until the morning, and then we took him to the airport for his flight. You know, people would say, my father wanted to be like him. My mother was in love with him. I learned to play the guitar based on his music. Always, always. It's just incredible. It always brings tears to my eyes. He was so beloved. I don't think he had any idea. He knew he was a star. And I'm not going to pretend he was a modest, retiring man. No, you know, he was a star, the way stars are. But he had no idea the extent to which he was beloved. And it's beautiful to be seen at still now.
Theodore Bikel's The City of Light is available Amazon.com, wherever books are sold. You can also find it at AmyGinsbergBikel.com. You can also learn more about the Theodore Bikel Legacy Project at AmyGinsbergBikel.com, as well as TheodoreBikel.net. And as Amy just said, if you'd like Amy to come to your city to spend an evening celebrating the life and legacy and her memories of Theo Bikel, you can contact Amy directly at AmyGinsbergBikel.com. One last question before we go. And this kind of touches on something you just said about every venue is different because every group of people who come to you afterwards, they have different stories to tell. Other than Sound of Music or Tevyeh in Fiddler on the Roof, is there a particular movie or TV role that audiences seem to glom to whenever they talk to you about Theo?
People love The Russians Are Coming. The Russians Are Coming. People loved it. It really is a very fun movie, and it's another one that's very ideologically in line with Theo's teaching, right? Because everyone's afraid of each other, and everyone thinks the other one wants to get the other one. But in the end of the day, it turns out everybody actually was just frightened of each other, and they would just love to be friends. That's The Russians Are Coming. And he played the captain in that. So people love that one very much. Now and again, I get a one-off fan who will tell me, oh, Theodore McHale, isn't that who played in Frank Zappa's 200 Hotels? That always gets kicked. Because, you know, when Theo did it, it was a lark. Frank Zappa and Theo shared a manager, I believe, or for a short time. And Frank Zappa said, oh, I'd love to get Theodore McHale to be in my movie. And Theodore McHale said, okay. He didn't even really know much about who Frank Zappa was. It's a very odd movie, but a fan favorite among the Zappa fans. And Theo plays a main role in there, and Theo always thought it was odd, but, you know, Zappa fans, they loved it. I mean, he has a whole fandom following in the Star Trek. You know, he was played Worf's father, and till this day, I'll get something from fans, or you'll see it on the internet. They'll go on and on about it. He's really a fan favorite there. And I Want to Live was another one that people loved. I Bury the Living is an odd movie where he plays some kind of a grotesque Undertaker. I Bury the Living, people kind of like that one.
Even something off the wall as he did an episode of Spider-Man with Nicholas Hammond. And, you know, that was, I would imagine that was one of many, I don't want to use the word disposable, but he was a working actor, and a lot of times, I mean, I got to know him well enough to understand this. A lot of times he used his performances on television to underwrite some of his personal, you know, passionate work on behalf of the Actors Fund or his other causes. And I didn't think about this much, but then I realized this morning because I was getting ready to talk to you, both he and Nicholas Hammond had the Sound of Music in common, so I would imagine if they had a chance to talk in between takes, they might have talked about that.
That's a beautiful idea. I actually did not know he'd been on Spider-Man, so now you taught me. Thank you very much. I'm always finding new things. Like, I know about the Gunsmoke. I know about the Little House on the Prairie, the Charlie's Angels. You know, all of that, but this I did not know. So I'm going to try to look that up right now so I can see it.
Amy Ginsberg Bickell is the founder of the Theodore Bickell Legacy Project. She's also the widow of Theodore Bickell. The Theodore Bickell Legacy Project perpetuates the ideals and passions that were the wellspring of the life and work of legendary actor, singer, songwriter, activist Theodore Bickell. To learn more about the Theodore Bickell Legacy Project, if you want Amy to come to a city near you, go to theodorebickell.net or amyginsbergbickell.com. Amy, thank you much. Thank you so much for joining us today on TV Confidential.
Thank you so much. I had a wonderful time. Thank you to the listeners for spending time with us, and thank you for yet another chance to say happy birthday to Theo at 100.
As we mentioned near the end of our conversation with Amy, we were fortunate enough to talk to Theodore Bickell on two occasions here on TV Confidential, once in June 2014 and again in December 2014. We will play both those conversations in our second hour. We hope you stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we'll be back with more TV Confidential right after.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. Their community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for a realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, brand assets, copyright rights, publicity rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com, tectoniclaw.com, to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com. Rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. If you're a fan of Mike Connors, if you're a fan of Mannix, be sure to check out Mike Connors, A Life of Integrity in Film and Television by Bill Taylor, an excellent new book that not only tells you everything you want to know about the life and career of Mike Connors, but captures the utter decency of Mike Connors the person. Mike Connors, A Life of Integrity in Film and Television, available now wherever books are sold through our friends at Bear Manor Media. You can also find it Amazon.com, BarnesNoble.com, wherever books are sold online. Ed Robertson, thanking you for listening to this special encore presentation of TV Confidential. We'll be back with a brand new edition of the program next week. Our guests will include Walter Koenig with the original Star Trek and the first six Star Trek movies, and Dean Butler, star of Little House on the Prairie, the new Gidget, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. In the meantime, we mentioned in our first hour that we were fortunate enough to talk to Theodore Bacall on two occasions here on TV Confidential. We will play both those conversations as part of this hour, beginning with a conversation that originally aired in June 2014 on the occasion of Theo's 90th birthday. For more on Theo Bacall, go to theodorebacall.net. For more on the Theodore Bacall Legacy Project, go to amyginsburgbacall.com/legacy-project. As Theo mentioned, his autobiography, Theo, was recently released. You can find out about that by going to Theo's website, bacall.com. There are many performances. I mean, you've done both for stage and for television, and film. There's one in particular I want to ask you about. You did a Columbo.
Yes.
And you worked with Peter Falk, who I know you worked with a couple of times before. And in that particular Columbo, you played a man who was a member of Mensa. Or the equivalent of Mensa. I think they called it differently. Now, what's interesting is, in doing my homework about you, you yourself once belonged to Mensa, and knowing that you have always been you've never let people pigeonhole you. You know,
Correct, yes.
So, you're a singer, you're a songwriter, you know, you're an author. So, I'm wondering, is there a relationship between your versatility as a performer and your various intellectual interests?
One informs the other. You don't have to be an intellectual to be a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I have colleagues who are natural actors and who couldn't, if you ask them, analyze what it is that they do or why it is that they do what they do. Others are capable not only to do what they do, but also to know it.
Yeah.
And to let other people know how that comes about, what the creative process is. So it helps being an intellectual, but I'm not saying it's the only requisite of being a good actor.
No, I mean, I think in a lot of respects it comes down to something instinctual. You know, I mean, you know, I mean, again, you know, somehow you're able to find something, some trait, some personality about the character that you're able to flesh out and bring to life, whether you're doing it for the stage or whether you're doing it for film.
And sometimes, you know, there are some actors who are what I would call personality actors.
Mm-hmm.
They don't change faces, walks. You call them one thing or call them another, but they always look the same, sound the same,
yeah,
walk the same. For example, Clark Gable.
Mm-hmm.
You can call him Red Butler or you can call him Joe Schmo, and he always looked the same and sounded the same. On the other hand, take Meryl Streep, and she's never the same from one role to another.
Yeah. Going back to Peter Falk, now, what's unusual about the Columbo experience is that, and again, you know this because you had done a lot of television prior to that, and television is a completely different, you know, it's a very frenetic industry,
yeah,
compared to the stage, where, you know,
yeah,
with stage you're allowed to rehearse, with television it's get it done quickly and we'll worry about it later. I understand with Falk, Falk took a stage actor's approach in that he not only allowed the other actors to rehearse, he insisted on as many takes as possible. I would imagine you appreciated that.
Very much so. Peter Falk would ask me, are you satisfied with the 3 takes that we did? If not, we'll do a 4th and a 5th and a 6th. He said that to me.
Well, I hope you've been satisfied with the time you spent talking to me, Theodore Bakil.
Very much so.
And I hope we'll have a chance. I know you're very busy and I know you're very active, but I hope we'll have a chance to chat again one of these nights on TV Confidential.
I hope so. Thank you very much indeed.
Theodore Bakil, from a conversation that originally aired in June 2014 on the occasion of his 90th birthday. Theodore Bakil passed away July 21st, 2015 at the age of 91. For more on the life of Theodore Bakil, go to theodorebakil.net. For more information on the Theodore Bakil Legacy Project and the various events on tap that will celebrate Theo's 100th birthday, go to amyginsbergbakil.com/legacy-project. We were fortunate enough to talk to Theo one other time on TV Confidential. That conversation aired in December 2014 and marked the release of Theodore Bakil in the Shoes of Shalom Aleichem, a documentary that combines Theo's own storytelling with a broader exploration of the works of Shalom Aleichem, a pioneer of modern Jewish literature that some people say was the Jewish Mark Twain. As we pick up the conversation, we said to Theo, I don't think you would describe the film this way, but knowing how important Aleichem has been to you, not only as a performer, but as someone who has been a significant part of your life from a very young age, it seems to me that the release of this film is one of the crowning achievements of your career. Is that safe to say?
I think it's safe to say that, and it's fair to say that, because I consider this film to be my legacy,
mm-hmm,
in more ways than one, because it has to do with me as an artist, it has to do with me as an intellectual, and it certainly has to do with me as a Jew, and with me as a proponent and supporter of the Yiddish language, which is what characterizes Shalom Aleichem. He wrote in Yiddish, and he was the only one of his contemporaries who did so, saying that he couldn't possibly write about his people unless he wrote in the language of his people. And the film, of course, is in English,
mm-hmm,
but I sing in it because Shalom Aleichem also loved music,
mm-hmm,
a lot. So I sing in both English and Yiddish, and we speak about Yiddish a lot and about how all this needed to be nurtured in my life and how the Shalom Aleichem books with which I grew up,
mm-hmm,
in the original language that were then confiscated by the Nazis and miraculously followed us to Israel, and from Israel, after my father died, to Amherst, Massachusetts. And then when I worked on the film and on my play, I needed them. They sent them to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so these books, too, had a journey, as I did. You know, and I'm 90 years old now, and my journey is not over, but I consider certain things to be a legacy, and this certainly is one of them.
I want to ask you about revisiting the books as an adult versus reading them or hearing the stories as a kid in just a second. But you mentioned your play, Shalom Aleichem, Laughter Through Tears, which itself is based on the collective works of Aleichem. I'm always interested in adaptation. I'm just guessing here, knowing how personal the material is for you, and given the vast amount of material you have to work with, I would imagine it had to be challenging to capture the essence of all of that in a form that is less than 2 hours.
Well, of course, yes, of course. but that is the curse of theater in general. You have to condense a lifetime into the span of 2.5 hours, and so there's a matter of time and space economy that is involved here. We of the theater manage to do exactly that. You pick and choose, and you really cry tears over what ends up on the cutting room floor.
Well, I would imagine one difference between the film version and the live theatrical version is that with the theatrical version, when an audience sees you perform Laughter Through Tears in person, there's probably a set number of songs that you want to tell, because that's the essence of your story, Theo's story, and your relationship with the material.
Yes.
But I would imagine
there are 8 songs in the play. There are also 8 songs in the film, not the same ones. Mm-hmm. Well, 3 of them are the same songs, the others are not. When we did the play, Laughter Through Tears, and it opened in New York, Elie Wiesel came to see it, and his first comment afterwards was, if this hasn't been filmed, it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't just film a play.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You know, you can put a camera there, sure, but that's for archival purposes, but not for general consumption. A film has different demands, different visuals that need to be added, different sounds that need to be done. There is a matter of history and a historical footage that I needed to get, and we did get it from long ago silent Yiddish films. The film, which is called Theodore Buchanan in the Shoes of Shalom Aleichem, has all of those elements in it, because it too, it has segments of the play, but they are few and far between. What it has is to tell the story of how Shalom Aleichem and I went through life together.
Ed Robertson, Mepha, Tony Figueroa, Donna Allen, Phil Grace, Greg Erbar, and Susan Sober, thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
The FBI Dossier, a guide to the classic TV series produced by Quinn Martin and starring Ephraim Zimlis Jr. The FBI Dossier, now available at blackpawnpress.com, amazon.com, and edrobertson.com.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices, and when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.